Today's sermon is entitled Right Star, Wrong Prophecy. It's based on Isaiah 60, 1 through 6, and Matthew 2, verses 1 through 12. Right Star, Wrong Prophecy. Today I'm going to continue to use this journey metaphor in presenting my sermon. It's a sermon that piggybacks on last week's sermon, which was about straying away from the right path. Well, today we have two texts that fit together, but not in the way that you might expect. And today's texts may actually illustrate quite well the point that we're no different than our ancestors in the sense that we are just as blind as they were, and our blindness can have very tragic consequences. Today, I hope that your eyes may be opened a little bit to these texts and that you may recognize how easy it is for us to lose sight and lose direction so that you would be on guard and teach your children to be on guard for those temptations that can lead us in the wrong direction. And my prayer is that as your eyes are opened, that you would see your path quite clearly amidst all the junk that lines the paths that we walk in life, the path that both follows Jesus and leads to Jesus. Last week we stopped in Jerusalem with the wise men, these magi, most likely from Iran is where they were. And it's quite interesting to me that they stopped in Jerusalem. And the text doesn't say that it's because the star stopped over Jerusalem. We read later that the star, which must be moving, stops over Bethlehem. So why did these wise men stop to make inquiries in Jerusalem, 9 miles from Bethlehem? One idea put forth by theologian Walter Brueggemann that I find quite intriguing is that the wise men had read the Old Testament passages that we were reading this morning. Well, they were wise men, after all, and wise men and wise women are wise because they take time to learn about other people and other cultures and other religions. So why not? That these texts would have been available to them, and there was no wall separating the kingdom of Persia from Jerusalem and from Judea. There was trade and travel and exchange of ideas. In fact, Matthew, the gospel writer, he refers to these men as magi, and that would have been a Persian term for them. They were followers of Zoroaster, who was considered a great religious philosopher in Persia. So Matthew was clearly pretty wise, a pretty wise man, who had some knowledge of neighboring cultures and of neighboring religions. And Walter Brueggemann, this theologian, asserts that since these magi are carrying gold and frankincense, and since they're stopping in Jerusalem, that they were probably reading Isaiah and making the connection between his prophecy and the star they happened to follow. Because Isaiah really was prophesying about Jerusalem. You see, around 600 BC, Jerusalem had fallen to the Babylonians, who happened to be from the east, just like the Persians, and a whole bunch of Jews were carried east into exile. But a few generations later, some of them were able to return, and they returned to a blown up, burned down, devastated, dilapidated, ruined city with no temple, no economy, no jobs, nothing. And here Isaiah recites this very, very hopeful poem that we read earlier. Arise, shine, for your hope, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the peoples. But the Lord will arise upon you, and his glory will appear over you. Nations shall come to your light, the kings to the brightness of your dawn. Well, this poem is about the glory of Jerusalem, not about Jesus, but about Jerusalem, a city that's restored. Not just restored, but elevated into a magnificent city with a giant temple and luxury condos. And this was the condition that Jerusalem was in when the wise men caught sight of the star. Jerusalem had been rebuilt, and Herod the Great had built this fantastic temple, this giant structure, which was really, really a powerful testimony to a certain comeback. Of course, you know, Herod was in collusion with the Romans, but hey, it was a nice temple, and these wise men probably figured that maybe this prophecy had come true, and they were going to Jerusalem to find this new king that the star foretold, because that's what stars did. They tended to foretell the coming of new kings. And it's not surprising that Herod the Great, had no clue what these wise men were after. Because Herod was a convert to Judaism. He had converted to Judaism simply because he was governing the Jews, and he figured, well, why not kind of get in close to them by at least prescribing to their religion? I mean, and it was to his advantage to do that. As religiously diverse as this nation is, as much as we like to profess that there is a separation of church and state, well, we have to admit that in our country, that it would be very hard for a non-Christian to ever become president. Well, Herod was just playing his political cards straight. He was Jewish because he ruled the Jews. It would have been much worse if he had just remained pagan. But Herod had no clue what these wise men were talking about. He probably hadn't read much or cared much about Isaiah's writings. He just wanted to keep his job, and it was a bit unsettling for him to learn that his replacement had been born somewhere close by. And so he consults with his religious experts who get it right. They understand what this Isaiah prophecy is about, and they say, no, Herod, there's not a king being born here in Jerusalem. No, the Magi are looking in the wrong place. The Messiah is going to be born, but not here. He's going to be born over there in Bethlehem. Now you notice that the wise men got it wrong on two counts, on both who and where. It was not a king who was being born, it was the Messiah. It was not he was not born in a fabulous temple in Jerusalem either. He was born in Podunk, Bethlehem, in a feeding trough, no less. The wise men were following the right star, but they had applied it to the wrong prophecy. The prophet Micah was the one who spoke of the Messiah and the Messiah being born in Bethlehem. To quote this passage from Micah, "And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel." You might imagine if the wise men came to the penthouse of a Wall Street banker to look for a newborn industrial mogul or something like that, and then being told, well, no, I'm sorry, this new person you're looking for is actually being born in the Bronx. Well, do you remember last week that we read from 1 Samuel? In 1 Samuel, it was a very strict warning about the character of a king and how he would exploit and subjugate his people. A king looks out for himself and rules with an iron fist. See what Herod's elders and prophets tell him is that no, it's not going to be born there in Jerusalem. It's not a king, it is a Messiah. And this is different. The Messiah, Micah compares it to a shepherd who wants to keep his sheep safe. And kings tend to mainly just keep themselves safe. For Messiah means that there is something different in character. A Messiah is a one-shot deal. You don't have a succession of Messiahs. And while the arrival of a new king changes nothing, really, because it's just one set of rulers versus another, the arrival of a Messiah really changes everything. To the poor and the oppressed, the arrival of a new king just means that the face of the rich and the oppressor changes. But to the poor, the arrival of a Messiah means that they have legitimate hope, that God is doing something unique, something different, and that the world is changing, that tomorrow may have something different than today. My brothers and sisters, do you have hope that this year is going to be different from the last, that the world won't be so violent, that it'll be more peaceful, more friendly, that people would be more welcoming, more understanding? These are the hopes for which Jesus, the Messiah, was born. He calls us to walk with him in faith, to walk among the poor, and he himself was born among the poor. He teaches us that it is better to serve than to be served, that because the path to self-service is a path we come to out of fear, the same fear that Herod expresses when he learned that another king had been born, the same fear that drove him to send his soldiers to kill babies. Fear does that. It leads us to protect ourselves at all costs, including the lives of others. I don't think anyone here is a baby killer, but if our minds lead us to believe that Jesus is to be found among the rich and the powerful, then that will be where we'll strive to be. And we will be perpetually broken and looking in the wrong places and always fall short of that true peace. The only peace that we gain from God is the peace that we gain from God. And the way we gain it is by going beyond Jerusalem to Bethlehem, beyond the rich and powerful and on like this, into the poor, to see the Messiah who came to bring hope to and something radically different, a kingdom founded on love and caring, not just for those who we know, but for the strangers as well. Remember that Jesus was born in Bethlehem. Find him there, and from there, walk with him wherever he leads you this new year, and may it truly be a new year for you.